From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
We're committed to getting the release of all the hostages, and we expect Hamas to release them all. But if they don't, we'll do whatever it takes to get them all back home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. That was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Saturday after Israeli special forces rescued four hostages from Gaza. Where the hostages were being held reveals why civilians are being killed. We'll get more on this daring daylight raid and the potential for a ceasefire agreement when Carolyn Glick, senior contributing editor of Jewish News Syndicate, joins us later in the program. Also, over the weekend.
This has been in place for 5 days now. What has the impact been? How many migrants have been turned away between those ports of entry?
Martha, we're at a very early stage. Implementation, as you noted, has just begun. It's early. The signs are positive.
Well, that was Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on ABC this week. We'll talk about that. Also, will we see congressional action this week on holding Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress for withholding information from Congress?
Merrick Garland's done more damage to the credibility of the Justice Cabinet than Dr. Fauci did to the credibility of public health. I don't think anyone in America believes anything that Merrick Garland's saying when he says that the Department of Justice isn't political, they're not treating Republicans differently than they're treating Democrats, and that they've done anything improper or inappropriate with respect to the Biden investigation.
That was Congressman James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee. We're going to talk with Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry, who is a member of the Oversight Committee as well. And speaking of the so-called Department of Justice, a Texas surgeon who blew the whistle on a Texas hospital for secretly performing trans surgeries on minors has been indicted by the Department of Justice. Dr. Ethan Heim has been indicted on four felony counts for allegedly violating the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
They were there to instill fear, to intimidate, but you know, as they were coming to find out, you know, they knocked on the wrong door because that day we decided to fight. We knew that, like, if we didn't do anything in that moment to fight back, that, like, what kind of future are we delivering to our children?
That was Dr. Heim in a May 31st interview discussing federal agents showing up at his home. We're going to talk with Roger Severino, former director of the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Health and Human Services during the Trump administration. And while Pride Month is fueling the drag queen story hours in libraries across the country, including in public schools during school hours, the Associated Press over the weekend was lamenting a volunteer student-oriented program that allows children, with their parents' permission, to leave school campuses for up to 2 hours a week for religious instruction. We're going to discuss the program, its history, and how you can help. Joel Penton, founder of LifeWise, joins us later on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, it's all archived right there. Also, let me encourage you, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, lots of resources there, interaction, there's groups, there's conversations, there's alerts. Everything you need to be an informed and engaged citizen. Download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, download it, or just text APP, APP, to 67742. Both chambers of Congress will be in session this week, with the House of Representatives likely voting by midweek on holding Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress for his refusal to turn over subpoenaed audio tapes of President Biden's interview with Special Counsel Robert Hur. In a narrowly divided House, do Republicans have the votes to hold Attorney General Garland in contempt? And does this move signify House Republicans will remain on offense against a weaponized Justice Department? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, the Foreign Affairs Committee, and the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and was recently appointed to serve on the House Intelligence Committee. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. Congressman Perry, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Tony. And we've got, you know, we've got a blockbuster week ahead of us. Merrick Garland should be held in contempt. But I think what we don't want to miss here is the fact that I think that this is a diversion from who's really in contempt, and that's President Joe Biden. Let's remember that he claimed executive privilege for the reason that the tapes can't be heard. Your audience needs to know that executive privilege is real. It allows the president to talk to his or her advisors and to talk freely. And we don't want that to change that for President Biden or President Trump or any president. But what it doesn't do is guarantee you some kind of shield from the law. This is claiming executive privilege so that the American people can't see the legal proceedings in the criminal case against President Biden. And so while Merrick Garland is also, he's classified this tape, even though we have the transcript, or allegedly have the transcript, right? But, and he is in contempt of Congress for that. But this really goes to President Joe Biden's refusal to give to the American people what is theirs.
So you have Merrick Garland basically stonewalling, standing in the way of getting this information that Congress wants that will allow them to do their investigation and hold their hearings into what we call the impeachment inquiry. But let me you just pointed out that you have the transcript, but they won't release the audio. How can they claim executive privilege over the audio but not over the transcript?
Well, they actually can't, and they know that all they're doing, Tony, is playing for time. They want this, to go to the courts and be held up till after the election, because I suspect that whatever is on the tape is devastating to the Biden campaign, and so they're using the law to change the trajectory of the election. It's not allowed in any circumstances, but they're begging for forgiveness after completing the act, as opposed to complying with the law up front. And this is a way to just stall.
So the House Rules Committee, Congressman Perry, is scheduled to consider a resolution to hold Garland in contempt tomorrow. What do you expect to take place in the Rules Committee tomorrow?
Well, I think the Rules Committee is going to move that forward to the House for a full vote. I suspect it will be unfortunately, a partisan vote. If this were, a Trump attorney general doing this, you can bet that every single Democrat would vote one way and there'd be a handful of Republicans would do the same thing. But in this case, all Republicans, I think, will vote to hold Merrick Garland in contempt. He is in contempt. But the Democrats will continue to support the law breaking on their side. They simply just don't care. It's a partisan exercise for them. And as long as what they perceive as helps them win the election, they're happy to break the law if that's the case, or to support somebody that does break the law.
So, Congressman Perry, are you pretty confident that all of the Republicans will vote to hold the Attorney General in contempt?
Well, we have a few seats in our favor now with we just filled the seat in California. So there might be one or two, but I do think that the measure is going to pass and Merrick Garland will be held in contempt. The real question, Tony, is, there are two. How does this reflect on Joe Biden? Because Joe Biden's really the problem. Merrick Garland is as well, but this really goes to Joe Biden. But the other thing is once we refer the contempt charge to Merrick Garland, he's probably not going to arrest himself. And so what is the House, what are the American people to do with a attorney general who's found in contempt of the law, in contempt of Congress? And the only thing, and I think it's unprecedented, would be for the sergeant at arms at the House's direction to go arrest Merrick Garland and put him in jail in the Capitol. And I don't think we've ever seen that. But if he's going to be held in contempt, that would be the appropriate thing to do to make sure that the punishment fit the contempt charge.
This is quite significant. I mean, this is the attorney general. Of course, we saw Eric Holder. Was also held in contempt of Congress back during the Obama administration for something very similar, withholding information from Congress.
Right.
But you have to have this information. So I think this is a very important debate that is taking place, action, even though it may just be on the House side, just as it was with the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary, Secretary Mayorkas. In fact, this weekend, I played that clip of him saying, well, it's too early to tell whether or not this executive order is working. Is this executive order simply about election year politics because the administration, the Biden campaign, hemorrhaging support because Americans are concerned about the porous southern border?
It's only about the election, Tony. We passed H.R. 2, the most significant border security bill ever to come out of Congress, a year and a half ago. Chuck Schumer and the president don't even acknowledge it exists. If you actually read this executive order, number one is this could have been done on day one. As a matter of fact, they should have just and could have just left the Trump policies in place. And so they're acting like now after a year and a half of his inability to do anything, suddenly now he can do something. He had the ability to do it all along. So that's number one. Number two, if you actually read the exceptions, I suspect more, not less people are going to come to the southern border and now the northern border illegally. And they're not going to do anything about it except claim that they've done something about it. So that's all this is. This is just messaging. There's no teeth to this. There's no, more importantly, there's no intention to do anything about it. They just don't want to be held responsible for what they've done. And that's why they've taken this executive, so-called executive action.
Well, again, over the weekend, Mayorkas, I'm going to see if I have a clip of him, making the claim that what is needed is Congress to act. That this is, and this is what the president's been saying. But they have the same tools. They have the very same tools that President Trump had, and he closed down the border.
That's exactly right. And you can see that Joe Biden, President Biden, is feigning using the very same tools. And if you look at that interview that you played a clip of just a little bit longer, you will see that Martha Raddatz then says, oh, well, you've been trying to discourage people from coming to the border illegally all along, which is yet another just bold-faced lie from the press, a softball to Secretary Mayorkas, where they have literally for the last 3.5 years been encouraging. President Biden's on record for saying we're going to ask him to surge to the border. My goodness, it's really not it's not good to lie, and it's really not good to lie to your friends. And in this case, he's lying to his bosses, all the American people who know that that is a lie.
Congressman Perry, just got about 40 seconds left, but congratulations on your appointment to the House Intelligence Committee. You now have oversight of the intelligence gathering agencies, including the CIA and the FBI. But there's been some pushback to you and Congressman Ronnie Jackson joining the committee. Why?
Well, first of all, I want to say thanks to Speaker Johnson and the chairman of the committee, Mike Turner. Look, I think Ronnie and I are very interested and anxious to get to work. We want our intelligence agencies to do a great job. We want them to be successful. We want them to thwart our foreign adversaries. That's their job. But Ronnie and I think members of the committee want to make sure that they stay within the bounds of the Constitution. Now, I've been very vocal about that, and maybe some people on the committee just aren't as vocal about their support of that. But, I think that if they're going to spy on Americans, they should have a warrant. That's what's in our Constitution. And that's right. Going to be what my vote reflects. And I think that concerns some people.
Yeah. And I should point out, Congressman Perry, you're a retired general in the National Guard in Pennsylvania. So you know something about all of this. Congressman, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Have a great day. God bless you.
All right, folks, stick with us. We're back with more Washington Watch after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Be sure and download the new Stand Firm app. You can find it in the App Store, or you can text APP, A-P-P, to 67742. In yet another example of the Biden administration weaponizing the legal system, the Department of Justice recently indicted Dr. Ethan Heim, the whistleblower who exposed Texas Children's Hospital for secretly conducting transgender surgeries and treatments on minors. Now, the felony charges against Dr. Heim are related to an alleged violation of medical records laws. But according to many familiar with the case, the documents disclosed did not contain identifiable patient information. If no laws were broken, was this indictment an effort to punish Dr. Heim by putting him through the process of having to defend himself? And was this indictment really an effort to silence the next potential whistleblower? Joining me now to discuss the latest on this and more, Roger Severino, Vice President of Domestic Policy at the Heritage Foundation. He previously served as the director of the Department of, or the Office, rather, of Civil Rights at Health and Human Services in the Trump administration. Roger, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
So the full nature of the charges have not been disclosed to Dr. Heim, who has a court appearance scheduled for next week. It is believed to fall under the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, in which you have extensive experience. So tell us, how could he have violated that by blowing the whistle on the hospital doing these secret surgeries on minors?
Well, that is the $10,000 question. Right. You can cooperate with law enforcement under HIPAA, and especially if there's no PII, personally identifiable information. So I was the nation's HIPAA regulator for 4 years under President Trump, and this is outrageous. We had never issued any sort of recommendation for prosecution for HIPAA violations, of which we had legions of them, because a criminal punishment is the essentially a death sentence for doctors for a HIPAA violation, especially here where it's illegal to do these experimental surgeries on minors. And you have a good faith whistleblower trying to say, as a mandatory reporter, This is what's still going on in Texas Children's Hospital. And this is the weaponization of the federal government to have the DOJ, the Inspector General's office, knock on your door and to say, hey, what have you been doing to protect kids? And we're going to go after you for doing this under HIPAA, of all things. And this reminds me, earlier, the Biden administration said that you cannot cooperate with law enforcement without violating HIPAA when it comes to abortion. So they're trying to say that if you have information about illegal abortions in Texas or elsewhere, you may also be criminally liable if you're cooperating with law enforcement, even in cases where they have a valid subpoena and a warrant. It just seems that there is no end to the weaponization of the justice system. They are going after President Trump at the highest levels. They're going after good faith doctors that are blowing the whistles at lower levels. That means every single person that is against the Biden ideological agenda is at risk of some sort of prosecution. It's a sad day.
So, Roger, this information that a hospital is conducting, whether it be abortions or whether it be these surgical procedures on minors, that can be that information can be released without releasing personal information that would disclose who the patient was, which appears to be the case here with Dr. Heim. So that would not be in violation of HIPAA.
If it is de-identified information, it is not covered information. So the question is, was it fully de-identified? But regardless of what actually happened in this case, the fact that they're using a criminal penalty to go after a whistleblower is absolutely unheard of. Again, for 4 years, this was my bread and butter of making sure and pursuing these sorts of cases. The remedy, if there is a violation, I'm not saying there's one here, but if there is, it's civil. You get a penalty. You don't have, you know, armed U.S. Attorney's Office or FBI agents, folks coming knocking at your door and then threatening to put you in jail for blowing the whistle to protect children from potentially unlawful activity. This is unheard of. It just shows that there is an ideological bent to this administration that stops at nothing to get its political way, and people that it deems to be political enemies are going to be persecuted. And here's another thing. They're trying to break this man. It's very expensive when the process is the penalty. He now has to defend himself, his good name, his reputation as a doctor. He now has a give, send, go campaign and already raised $200,000. Christopher Rufo has tweeted about it to help support this man in his endeavors in defending himself against a DOJ and a Biden administration that has run amok.
So just to be very clear here, Roger, you're saying this is unprecedented in what we're seeing happen with the Department of Justice.
Oh, absolutely. Again, HIPAA is by and large for civil penalties where you actually pay money for violations. We had major ones where hacks were, where the entities were irresponsible and millions of personally identifiable records were put out there. We didn't threaten to put these folks in jail for that. People were really hurt. They were harmed, but we're going to throw them in jail for it. But now the Biden administration is trying to go after somebody protecting children with jail time.
So this is more about a scare tactic, intimidation, silencing those who would challenge the ideological agenda of this administration and the left.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'll go back to the abortion example. They are saying that abortion gets a special carve out under HIPAA. These regulations were issued very recently that says HIPAA is okay to cooperate with law enforcement with one broad exception, and that is abortion. So if you have a warrant from the state of Texas, for example, for illegal chemical abortion, and you want to track down who this abortionist is that's hurting women with the illegal chemical abortion pills, a warrant would not be enough. They would have to have an independent factual basis to be able to comply with a warrant, which means they're putting, these are just regular doctors that are dealing with the aftermath of illegal abortions. Either they comply with a state warrant that says you must give us information about these abortionists that are handing out these pills, or you risk prosecution from the Biden administration for cooperating with state law enforcement, which means this is all about ideology, whether it's about abortion or transgender sex change operations, so-called, on minors. It's not about the science. It's not about the law. It's about pushing this ideology. And if you get in the way, they are threatening jail time for you.
Well, this puts doctors in an untenable situation, because if you're in a state and you get a warrant, a subpoena for this information, you can be held in contempt for not complying with that warrant. But yet, on the other hand, you've got the Biden administration coming after you.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. When ideology clouds everything, and look what's happening with President Trump, look what's happening in the Department of Defense with abortion. They even say that if you're an abortionist, you can get indemnified. The federal government will pay for you if you commit a criminal abortion.
Roger, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Great to see you. Thanks for joining us. Folks, stick around. We're back after this.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Monday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Be sure and check it out. So on this program, we've discussed LifeWise Academy, a Christian ministry that brings weekly Bible lessons to public school children during school hours through what is called time release of students. Now, this is something that goes back to a court decision in 1952, been around a long time. Now, the ministry has experienced phenomenal success setting up chapters at more than 520 locations in 23 states next school year, reaching about 31,000 students with biblical teaching during the school day. Now, it's usually about an hour or two during the course of the week. But with that success comes a backlash from the legacy media, these anti-Christian groups, and even some state legislators. Recently, in fact, over the weekend, the Associated Press attempted a hit piece of concern about children receiving instruction from the Bible. You know, where is the concern about children being exposed to the sexualized messages of the LGBT agenda? And the fact that during Pride Month, many public libraries are doing these drag queen story hours, but yet they're lamenting children being released, going off of school property, no school dollars involved. This is simply ministries reaching out 1 to maybe 2 hours a week to help these kids. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Joel Penton. He's the founder and CEO of LifeWise Academy. Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
So, Joel, it looks like you guys have your success has rattled a few cages, and the left may be concerned that their drag queen story time hours might be missing a few students. Are out there saying that this is a horrible thing.
Well, I tell you what, they try to make it sound like a controversy, but I'd have to say it's a manufactured controversy, because the truth is we are being welcomed with open arms. When we go and meet with schools, 93% of the time we're able to come to an agreement with schools. We have incredible responses from parents, from community members, but there is a small segment of our society, for whatever reason, really doesn't like to see the next generation in increasing numbers being taught the Word of God.
Now, I want to take on some of the arguments laid out in this Associated Press article over the weekend, some lamenting that, look, test scores are declining. Literacy rates are on the decline. We can't afford to have kids missing out on instruction.
Well, I tell you what, if people are concerned about literacy rates, if they're concerned about kids missing class, then they should love what we're doing with LifeWise Academy, because a third-party independent study shows that when LifeWise Academy is implemented, attendance goes up to the point there's a net increase in class time. For one, students who attend LifeWise typically miss zero class. It's at lunchtime or recess time, or it's library time. But even beyond that, kids are showing up for school that much more. They're spending a lot more time in class, which is why you're seeing behavior improve. You're seeing test scores improve. And so those with those concerns should love what we're doing.
So Joel, are you saying that when kids are able to step outside of the school for an hour, maybe 2 hours a week, and hear a message that there's a God who made them and loves them, it gives them motivation to go to school and do their best?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're seeing the result, and it's not just me saying that. I mean, this is looking at publicly available data that kids are showing up more. In fact, we just heard from an inner city principal that said the one day out of the week that she hits her target attendance numbers, which is above 90%, is the day that they have LifeWise. She said that she has seen their disciplinary issues drop by 50%. So, yes, I mean, it's not a surprise to us that when you invest the Word of God into the hearts of children, it produces fruit.
And this is all done legally. Supreme Court decision going back to 1952. In fact, this has been going on for decades. Just not all schools have taken advantage of it. But now we've got ministries like yours that are focused on helping schools be able to allow students to have this experience. So here's what I want to ask you, Joel. I think I love it. I think it is so important that we talk to these kids during this very formative time in their life when their worldview is being formulated. How can people help you?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. The truth is that this can work anywhere across the country. As you mentioned, we are going to be live next year in over 500 schools across 23 states. Some of those are inner city, suburban, rural, and everyone who's listening right now can get involved. If you go to our website, lifewise.org, you can look up any school district in the nation. The way these things get started is through local people voicing their support. So you can find your local school. You can say, yes, I want this in my community. When we see 50 signatures in a community, then we begin the rest of the process of forming a steering committee, of going to the school, all of the many steps, but it starts with people saying, I want this in my community, and sharing it with everyone you know.
If there was ever a time that our kids needed the ability to hear this message that God created them, loved them, and they have a future, now is the time. Joel, I commend you for your work, and we're going to encourage people to check out the website and get involved in their local communities to see LifeWise come to their school. So, Joel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Tony, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, you know, we lament the bad things that are occurring, and there are a lot of them. But evidence of God at work. I mean, this ministry is growing by leaps and bounds, and there are others that are doing the same thing. I encourage you to go to the website, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, go to LifeWise Academy. Find out more about how you can be involved in this and bring it to your local community. We need to reach these children with the love of the Lord Jesus Christ. Make it happen. All right, after the break, we're going to be joined by Carolyn Glick from Israel. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today. As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Be sure and check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, this is our cancel-resistant digital platform that will make sure that you continue to get news from a biblical perspective that can help you stay engaged and be informed. So just download, go to the App Store, download Stand Firm, the Stand Firm app, or text APP to 67742, and you'll get a link for you to get the app. Our word for today comes from 2 Samuel chapter 19. Now all the people were in a dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king saved us from the hand of our enemies. He delivered us from the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled from the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing back the king?" You know, what does this tell us about people? Well, it tells us they're fickle. David is the one who saved them from their enemies, but then Absalom came along, wooed them with smooth talk and campaign promises, so they went with him until he was defeated, and now they're back to David. You know, public opinion shifts with the wind. While it might be instructive to know what people are feeling, you can't really say it's thinking, it's feeling. We shouldn't choose our course based on widespread public opinion, because chances are it's probably wrong. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible or simply text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. In a daring raid on Saturday, the Israeli Defense Forces rescued four hostages held by Hamas since October the 7th. The effort to free the four hostages included heavy air and ground support and marked the IDF's largest rescue operation since the war against Hamas began in October. Now, this comes as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken makes his eighth trip to the Middle East in another Biden administration push for a permanent ceasefire. But how could Israel possibly accept any deal that leaves Hamas in power and in control of Gaza? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Carolyn Glick. She is a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
It's great to be back on your show, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know watching the news over the weekend, a sigh of relief for many, a point of celebration as four Israelis came home after being held by Hamas. What do we know about the approximately 120 hostages who remain in captivity?
Well, what we know is that 79 of them are presumed to be alive and the rest of them are presumed to be dead. And we know that they're not being treated well. The four that were returned, that were rescued by our incredible commandos on Saturday, were telling of physical and psychological torture. They tried to brainwash them, force them to read verses from the Quran, and they subjected them to terror all the time. Their lives were in danger every minute. Noor Argamani, the woman who was freed on Saturday, was basically kept as a house slave by this very wealthy family in Gaza that would open her door anytime they wanted and demand that she clean here, clean there, do whatever. They had the good fortune of being held in apartments rather than in the tunnels. So this is the plight of the hostages, that they are kept in horrible conditions and threatened all the time.
Let's talk about that for just a moment, Carolyn, where as a result of the operation and the armed resistance that the Israeli special forces encountered, there were 200, according to Gaza's health ministry, there were 274 Palestinians killed in that operation. Now, that's just taking their numbers at face value. But should we be surprised by that if it's civilians that are actually holding these hostages?
No, the men were being held by a family, the father of whom was a physician. This is the second time that we've had a situation where hostages were released that were being held by doctors. And the son and his wife also live there along with the sister and the husband. The son is Al Jazeera reporter and is a former senior official of Hamas. So that's the three men were held by these civilians, a physician and a reporter. And Noor Argamani said that she was being held by a wealthy family as well. So these are civilians carrying out war crimes, and they are Hamas terrorists without uniforms. But they are Hamas terrorists to all intents and purposes. They're holding hostages. They're threatening their lives day in and day out for 8 months. So, and so were the civilians all around them. They're essentially Hamas, because the people who were opening fire on the rescuers and on the hostages and on the evacuation vehicle, the people who killed the commander, our incredible hero, Arnon Zamora, who was buried yesterday, they were Hamas terrorists and civilians. And so, you know, from the Hamas Health Ministry's perspective, all terrorists are civilians. Everybody who Israel kills is a civilian. And even the AP, that's been parroting their numbers, had to reduce by 50% the number of women and children that are assessed to have been killed by Israeli forces, because they discovered that Hamas's Ministry of Health data are totally fabricated. And they, I mean, their methodology is just make-believe. And everybody's parroting them because it's convenient to believe that Israel is wantonly killing women and children, when, of course, the opposite is true, and that Hamas is the one that has been targeting innocent civilians since it was established in 1987.
Well, Carolyn, it would sound like, you know, if every terrorist is a civilian, based on what we're seeing here, many civilians are terrorists in terms of their cooperation with Hamas.
It's exactly right. I mean, you know, there were more civilians, that is ununiformed women, children, men, who invaded Israel on October 7th, and there were uniformed Hamas terrorists. And these people, these innocent civilians, they took hostages, they raped women, they murdered children, they burned families alive. In house after house, the survivors of the kibbutz massacres were saying that the that the grown-ups gave the honors to burning families alive, to lighting up the houses on fire to children as young as 9 years old, and that this was sort of their way of celebrating their murder of the Jews, was to let their children do it. And so, yes, this was a murderous assault, not only by Hamas, but by Palestinian society as a whole, which is why it's not that surprising that 85% of the Palestinians support October 7th, not only in Gaza, but in Judea and Samaria as well.
So how close are we, Carolyn, to seeing Hamas as a military entity being dismantled? But then the second part to that question is, if you have a civilian population that has been radicalized with the ideology of Hamas, what are the next steps?
So I think two things have to be borne in mind. What the Army assesses now, what I heard on the news tonight, is that they assess that it's going to be another 3 weeks or so of heavy action in Rafah, and that aside from that, the IDF is going to be going down to more low-intensity warfare against terror cells as opposed to conventional units, because most of the conventional units have been destroyed or massively degraded. And so most of the armed conflict that we're going to be seeing in Gaza is going to look more like counter-guerrilla warfare between IDF forces and Hamas terror cells. So that's what their assessment is right now. And we're already moving forces up to the north, where we expect to have a much larger war starting soon.
Talk just a moment about up north, because that doesn't get reported on very much. I mean, you still have a large population that's been displaced since the beginning of this, as you have the missiles and rockets coming in from Hezbollah in the north.
Right. Well, we had about 100 missiles and drones shot into Israel just today into northern Israel from Hezbollah controlled Lebanon. And right now we have 60,000 Israelis who live along the border with Lebanon that were evacuated already shortly after October 7th to prevent them from being kidnapped and murdered the way that it happened to the civilians along the border with Gaza on October 7th. But you can anticipate that that number will go up by, 100,000 or so when we start dealing with a more conventional war in Lebanon itself, because the only way that Israel's going to be able to allow anybody to come back safely to their home is by massively degrading Hezbollah's capabilities along the border with Israel. And the only way that you can do that is through a ground operation. And so right now, the assessment in Israel, I think by the public and by the leadership together, is that we have to steel ourselves for a much bigger war and a much more difficult war in Lebanon, because the Hezbollah forces are much more powerful than the Hamas forces that we fought at such cost until now. So we're talking about a very difficult front in the north.
So let's talk about that, Carolyn, from the standpoint of late yesterday, the Biden administration asked the United Nations Security Council to vote on its latest resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken in the Middle East today basically saying Israel has signed off on this. How does this affect the threat from the north? I mean, is this further tying of Israel's hands and their ability to defend themselves?
Look, I mean, we want to get to a lower intensity conflict in Gaza as quickly as possible, because we need to move as many forces to the north as we can. So the faster we can finish the high intensity warfare stage of the operation in Gaza, the faster we're going to be able to diminish the force size in Gaza and increase the force size in the north. So, Israel would like to get to that period, but we're not going to get it from a ceasefire, because Hamas will never abide by a ceasefire, and certainly not if we start fighting in Lebanon and they're not defeated in Gaza. They'll just reinstate the hostilities to help Hezbollah. So we can't have a ceasefire that leaves them with their weapons, that leaves them in charge of the government in Gaza, and allows them to rebuild their forces. And unfortunately, the idea that the Biden administration is advancing now through the Security Council is one that will do just that. So they're placing Israel in great peril with this Security Council resolution, and they're doing it on purpose, because from Biden's perspective, the longer that the war in Gaza goes on, the more difficult his election situation becomes. And so they want to end it as quickly as possible, even if that means Israeli defeat. As for Lebanon, the Biden administration has been demanding that Israel not take action in Lebanon really since October 7th, the don't that President Biden expressed right after the Hamas invasion was directed to Iran and to Hezbollah, but it was also directed towards Israel. And whereas Hezbollah and Iran didn't listen to him, Israel has been listening to him. And it's a problem because Hezbollah has massively escalated its assaults on Israel over the past month to the point where Israel simply cannot abide by what's happening any longer. It's not just a tit for tat anymore. They are burning up northern Israel. They're burning our grazing land. They're burning our forest preserves. They're burning our communities. They've destroyed over 1,000 homes in the border communities with their anti-tank rockets and their drones since October 7th. So they're trying to render northern Israel uninhabitable, and basically all areas of that section of Israel, which is the breadbasket of Israel, are now under effective Hezbollah control. You stick your head out of your house, they see you, and they can kill you. And it's a real problem. We can't continue accepting this situation, and the only way to end it is not to reach some sort of cockamamie deal with Hezbollah that the administration is pushing. We actually have to send, unfortunately, our forces into Lebanon to take care of the threat.
Carolyn, do the Israeli leaders anticipate that they're going to face the same international opposition when they move into the northern part and take on Hezbollah?
Yes. And, you know, I guess the one good thing that's come out of the international abandonment of Israel and support for Hamas against the Jewish state is that it's steeled the Israeli people and, to a degree, the Israeli leadership against this kind of international onslaught where, unbelievably, Hamas's genocidal jihadist terrorist organization army that invaded Israel and slaughtered 1,200 and took 250 hostages, et cetera, is actually the side that the elites in the Western world support. So I think that, you know, we've sort of been rendered immune to this sort of thing because now we understand how things stand. And the thing that the Americans, I think the Biden administration, understands less well is the psyche of the Israeli people. I mean, October 7th convinced the vast majority of Israelis that we're in a war for our national survival and that we can't accept anything less than absolute victory.
Right.
Because if we do, we will face more and more October 7th. And so, you know, they don't seem to recognize that. They think that if they pressure Netanyahu, that we'll hate Netanyahu and we'll blame him. But the more they pressure Netanyahu, the higher he goes in the opinion polls, the more the nation clings to him.
Yeah. I think the timing of his speech here before joint session on July the 24th is going to be very, very significant. Carolyn Glick, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your support for Israel. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Folks, and I want to encourage you to continue to pray for Israel. Pray for Israel. All right, we're out of time for today. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.